Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to the Celtic Soul podcast with me, Andrew Millen. You're all very welcome to the show. Episode 18 already, and today my guest will be former Celtic and Spurs player Ramón Vega. This episode has been sponsored by CelticClothing.com, and I'd like to thank Charlie Lord for his continued support. Well, the pre-seasons are done and dusted, and now it's time to get down to the business. Sunday sees the quest for the 10 in a row kick-off against Hamilton. I still expect some new faces to come in to bolster the squad, and without sounding like a broken record, we need to strengthen at the back, and we need to add cover and competition for the number one goalkeeper's jersey. After watching the game against Hibs yesterday, I think we have some quality young players coming through. Neil Lennon fielded an experimental lineup with a couple of injuries to first team players, and he rested all the boys that played on Sunday. Young Irish international Luke O'Connell looked impressive. He came on in the second half and he can deliver a decent pass, and he links up play from back to front in the middle of the field. So I'll be looking forward to seeing a bit more of him this season. It looks like Lenny and Griff have kissed and made up, and that spells good news. He looked sharp when he came on and was robbed of a goal when Paddy Klamala was just too eager to impress the manager and tapped in from close range. But fair play to Paddy, he got on the score sheet again, and there was no doubt about his second goal. Young Dembele opened the scoring, and he grew into the game after he equalised. 3-1, a good walkout, following on from the 2-0 on Sunday, when the more recognisable 11 took to the field. I think the lineup that played on Sunday will most likely start against the Aggies on Sunday. Ramón Vega is a successful businessman, a Swiss international footballer who won silverware with Grasshoppers, Spurs and Celtic. And here's how we got on when I chatted to Ramón earlier on.
Hi, Ramón. You're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast. How is life for you being in lockdown?
Oh, hi, Andrew. How are you today? Yes, I'm glad to be on this Celtic podcast. Well, I think the lockdown is pretty much like everybody else. Came by, obviously, a lot of surprises, and at the same time, never was expected this. Yeah, these ups and downs, and also the consequences behind this lockdown, of course, you know, from the economic point of view, but also from the safety and health issues as well. It's quite a worrying, a lot of family members potentially, and so on. So it's a different times, let's call it. And I think everybody has to adjust a little bit. But at the same time, I had plenty of time for myself as well and family again, you know. It's also nice.
Yeah, I think a lot of people had time to maybe rethink. I think we were all living very busy lives and maybe busy doing nothing some of the time. And it just did give people to think, you know, yeah, we can have some time with the family now, or we can have some downtime to think about the future. Now, everyone knows about your football career, and it's been well documented about business stuff you've done over the years. But can you take us back first to, you know, your childhood in Switzerland and the Spanish connection? You know, give us a little bit about your background before you became, I suppose, a well-known football player.
Well, I think, you know, football, there's the beauty about football. Football, pretty much in a way, there's no really a country flag in place there from where you're coming from. only us if you play for the national team, of course, you know. But in the same time, if you're a talented player, football really can, you can play anywhere in the world, and that's the beauty about football. In my case, I'm coming from an immigrant background from Spain. My parents were Spanish, and they were growing up, obviously, at the Franco area in Spain. If you know a little about history in Spain and Franco, and it was not really a nice time. I think the only one dictatorship in Europe for the last 40-50 years, 20 years ago. And they escaped Spain to Switzerland for obviously a better life, of course, and work, you know. They managed to do that. Not easy. Leave it alone, not speaking the language, because Switzerland has German, French, and Italian. Neither of them, my parents, could actually speak, only Spanish. Still managed to get the job and work through it. I was then born in Switzerland through that, lucky enough in a way, because they give me an environment where it's a nice place, obviously, to be born as well, and also growing up as well. And yeah, but always growing up, I still had this immigrant kind of profile as such, because obviously, first of all, the name is Spanish, as you can manage, Ramon. And in Switzerland, you know, there's not many Ramons walking around. And of course, you've been seen as the immigrant, even you were born there and grew up there and you spoke the language or German or French or Italian in this case, you know. So it was you had this kind of battle to prove the home, kind of the locals as such, even I was a local myself, you know. To prove them that yeah, I'm equal to them or potentially better, you know. And that's was not easy sometimes, to be honest with you, but football has given me this platform to prove that. And I was lucky enough then to join Grasshopper Zurich, one of the main clubs in Switzerland at the time, with 16 years old, and yeah, they gave me really kind of an identity in a way, because before, yeah, you're in battle to identify to be a part of Switzerland society, but football has given me that. Grasshoppers, first of all, was the first club to do that.
A lot of footballers, they pursue a career in football and maybe they leave home young, and back in the day they maybe didn't get educated, but you got educated.
Yes. Well, yeah, that's the other part of also born and grew up in Switzerland. Also the hard work of my parents. I have to thank them, to be honest with you, you know. I came with nothing to Switzerland between you and me, and they really built up a platform for myself for the future. Not limited, of course, to football. Football has given me kind of where I am today a little bit, you know. But in the same time, my mother and father really, really emphasized the education, you know. And Switzerland has, without a doubt, one of the top educations in the world, you know. And I was lucky to be there. And when Grasshoppers called me up with 15, nearly 16 years old at the time, my mother was not happy in the first place, because said, well, what's happening with all the hard work we put into it? You know, you need to have an education, decent education for whatever happens in football, you know. So Grasshoppers at the time was a little better. I was a little bit disappointed because I nearly never joined Grasshoppers because of my mother was saying, you need to educate. If you don't have education, you don't join Grasshoppers. And then Grasshopper were kind enough to accommodate that wishes of my mother to, are you going to have an education, but also join Grasshoppers in the same time playing football? So I was like, in a way, the first ever prototype in a way of football and education together as a youth player at that time, you know. So I joined at 16 years old and I'd done my banking and business education there in Switzerland, working partly in a bank, but also playing football at the same time and go to school. So it was hard. Because most guys at 16, 17, 18 or 19 were going out at the weekend and having fun, as you can imagine. And that's normal. That's every 16, 17, 18, 19 supposed to do. I was working hard and trying to play football on the weekend, be in the first team, but also trying to go through the exams, where it was a pain. Let's be honest, if I look back, it was a pain. There was a lot of fights at home as well. But I'm telling you that now here. If I look back, it was worth every time because that time you're thinking, as a youngster, life goes on forever and you play football, you think that's forever this world. But I have to say, thankful to perseverance for my mother to do that kind of education, because that was my, let's call it my second chapter of my life after football, to be honest with you. If you didn't have that, who knows what we've been doing, to be honest with you, today, this world, you know. And I think I think for every youngster or every football my or wants to be a football player, I will advise them to have at least some education. It doesn't have to be major an academic person, because, you know, everybody is that, but at least something you can actually have a plan B in case football might not work out. Maybe work out until 2025, and then maybe you have an injury or you're not really out of contract and you might have to go to the, let's call it, brackets into normal life like everybody else, to work, and you need to get the job. And if you have an education, you have a much easier access to get that. So it was very lucky that I had this, but at the same time, they needed to push me as well. Let's be honest as well, because it was very difficult for me as well to do that. And I was lucky to play football for Grasshoppers there afterwards as a professional and had that degree. And also, I think if I look back, it does give you also more confidence. If you parallel doing this education within 16 to 19, you don't really get away from the reality of life. Because let's be honest, you know, football is a dream for every single kid to be a football player, because you're living in a kind of small bubble as well, okay? But during that time, 16, 17, 18, yes, I was dreaming. I was actually going through the best dream of my life to play a professional player, but also I went back to reality, like everybody else, has to go through the education system, has to go to university, go to the classes and everything else. And that keeps you grounded as well, to be honest. And that's a nice thing part of it as well. And it also gives you confidence, because, you know, okay, it might not happen with football, but I have something to backup there. And that's, I think, an advice also for the future of youngsters if they really want to go into that level. You know?
It's a great story, Ramon. I was fascinated to hear about your parents fleeing Franco's Spain in search of a better life and not speaking the language. And the life they managed to carve out for themselves and make sure you got your education. Because I think most of us, if our kids were good enough to be professional footballers, we'd probably forget about the education, because we'd be so excited ourselves. But you had a successful time at Grasshoppers. You won three leagues and a cup with them. So obviously a very successful team. And to be, as you say, to be in it from such a young age. You then moved to Italy, to Calgary, then on to Spurs. Now, in the summer of 2000, there was big changes in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Rangers were the dominant team. We had stopped the 10 under Wim Jansen, but then we had another two seasons where Rangers were back in control. And Martin O'Neill came into Celtic, and he was building a team, and it was a team of men. He was bringing in physical men because he'd said we'd been bullied. Now, he did try to sign you back in that summer. What happened then, and can you fill us in?
Well, at that time, only the rumours, well, in a way, in the summer, was more only the rumours that he would like to sign me, but nothing really came to fruition or conversation as such. So I start the season with Spurs, okay? Don't forget, I came back from an injury after the League Cup win with Spurs a year before. So I was just really coming 3-4 months back to my injury back then in the summer, and I started the season with Spurs. But during that 2-3 months, obviously, the conversation started to intensify even more with Martin O'Neill. And then by November, I think, something like that, really, we start to sit down and say, okay, Celtic wanted me to go there. And I was really, really actually keen to go, because I was very excited what Martin O'Neill was trying to do. I think he's having already a few other players joining them in that season. And I think this is a great team potentially to win quite a lot of things there, you know, not knowing then what we're going to win. To be honest with you, you know. So, first of all, great. I was excited to go. And then once really was concrete to go up there, I was very excited to go to Glasgow, you know, especially Scotland, you know. So when I arrived to Glasgow, the airport, and joined Celtic, it was like I can see immediately the impact it has given me in terms of the reception, just the whole energy around the Celtic fans and everything. It was unbelievable. It was something I said, wow, this is... I felt straight away home. I didn't even play 1 minute. I just immediately landing on Glasgow Airport and just coming out to the security and go to the stadium and everything. Just the reception was for me immediately a great feeling. Let's call it that. Really, really good feeling, you know. And then I didn't thought I was going to play the first game, because I think I joined on Thursday or Friday, and on Saturday we had the game against Aberdeen. So I thought you might just be on the bench to start to see your players, because you never trained with them, only once half an hour before the game. And then I was very surprised that actually Martin immediately put me in the cold water at Celtic Park. And that was just an amazing experience. This is, I always, to everybody, to all my football friends, even back in Switzerland, Chile, Spain, whatever I speak to, so what is your best time? Where's the most kind of impressive way of describing the football at Celtic Park when you're walking out of that tunnel as a player off the clock? It's different scenario, you know.
Well, I was at that game and you actually signed on a Friday, and
yeah, you still remember that.
I think the game was a Sunday. Now, we beat Aberdeen 6-0, I know that, but you scored two goals. I think it was two headers, maybe, but yes, definitely one was a header because it was right in front of where I sat at the time. I sat behind the goals, and I do remember, and we did host you that night on the way home on the boat. So you became an instant hero.
Because I'll tell you what, as I came in, and it's just, on Friday, I signed in on Saturday, I was with the team. And what you do before the game, you tell, you got to know the people, you know, Adam Thompson, Chris Sutton, also had a big kick, Henry Glasson, of course, Neil Lennon, you know, all kind of great characters. Immediately, obviously, make me welcome, they're sometimes joking, like Chris Sutton and all these guys that always had these had characters, you know, but immediately kind of welcome me warmly to the team. And that made the big difference, because it's not always you join a club straight away. It takes maybe a week, 2 weeks or months to adapt to the characters of the team, you know. But these guys immediately on Saturday when I arrived, immediately to make me welcome, warm welcome. And that's, I think, this is why I think on Sunday when we play the other team, we look like we've played all the time together. We only never trained, not even once, not 1 minute I trained with all these guys, you know. And yeah, the two goals was just a bonus, let's be honest, you know. I think one was on free kick for Alan Thompson, with the header, and one with the feet, I think, was great experience at Celtic Park.
What a left foot Tomo had.
Oh, yes. We had some great characters in the team. Oh, man. Neil Lennon, obviously Chris Sutton, Alan Thompson, then Paul Lambert as well in the centre midfield, where the big fellas in the back as well, Mjalby, Van Garden. We're three big fellas, can you imagine, you know, we're like a wall in the back, you know, we really played fantastic, you know, and we melted very well together. We really communicated well, we connected straight away, and it always helps. You go the first game in, and then you're winning 6-0, not 1-0 or 2-0, 6-0, and you're scoring two goals as a defender. What else you can ask for, you know? And the paradise started from then. It was for me like a journey never wanted to end, to be honest to you, you know? Ah, Celtic fans is, for me, one of the best in the world. There's no doubt about that.
Now, you were only at Celtic for 6 months. And a short time, but yeah, how successful a time. You know, 26 appearances, 4 goals and a treble. Unbelievable.
Yes, I tell you, if I look back now, this is really unbelievable, you know. At that time, it was like surreal as well. But I was a player, and of course, you know, it was within 6 months, you win pretty much everything Scotland can give you as a medal, you know. And also the town, we broke that kind of 9 wins for Rangers as well at the time. And we really kind of, I think that was the start of the very successful Celtic period in a way as well, you know. Again, it's a shame I couldn't stay longer. I wanted to stay longer, to be honest with you. I said that for quite early stage already, because I felt at home in Glasgow. Really, you know, Scotland was for me a great place to stay, in Glasgow as well.
You mentioned Rangers there. You're an international footballer. You played in the Premier League. You played in Italy. Mm-hmm. You played in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. We know how big of a game it is. We know the tribalism.
Huge.
Were you prepared for it?
You never be prepared for something like that, to be honest with you. Until you never experience yourself, you never can be prepared. People telling you about it, talking about it, you can watch programs about it, like a supporter and same thing. But physically, as a player, once you start that game, it's beyond of every goosebumps you can get, let's call it that. It's unbelievable. What passion these supporters on that game from from both sides, you know. But I was happy to present Celtic and also done very well against Rangers at that time. You know, Celtic Park, unbelievable atmosphere. Yeah, it's for me, it's like a little church there, let's call it. Not church, it's a cathedral already, you know. So big, you know, so loud, you know. And the supporters are unbelievable in that way. That's something for me I never will forget. It's kind of beautiful memories I had of Celtic.
Well, I'm getting goosebumps now just thinking about them games.
it is. And then winning against them, that's fantastic. You know, it's great. You know, you got satisfaction, you got behind your, you know, you got that green white shirt coming out and then beating the Blues. It's something out of this world, you know. And then also winning on that year, the treble. That's pretty much telling Rangers, you know, okay, you've done it 8-9 times, but now it's time for Celtic, you know.
Yeah, we were bossing it then. But, like, for us as fans, to win that game, it's just so important. And the players think, oh, it's great to play in this. But for us, no matter who puts on that shirt, if they go out and they beat Rangers or get a result, this doesn't make a weekend. This doesn't make a week. This can make a year for people. This can make a summer.
I'll tell you what, I noticed that on my first derby. You know, listen, I played the London derby, Arsenal, with Spurs, Arsenal, many times, you know, in my 4.5 years of Spurs, you know. Obviously, they're also big rivals, can you imagine, you know. I'll tell you what. Celtic Rangers is a different level. It's an absolutely different level. It's one of the biggest derby, I think, in the world, without a doubt. It's definitely up there with Real Madrid, but, well, it's not even a derby, Real Madrid, Barcelona, the Clásico, but seems like the same, you know, or Lazio, Rome, you know, but Celtic Rangers is just up there. There's no doubt whatsoever. And I remember the first derby that week before, I never seen my life. There was about 1,500, or I would say, 1,500 to 2,000 people fans Celtic in our training ground on a daily basis. Unbelievable excitement, the passion behind, and the motivation it was giving us for a Saturday playing against Rangers. I never seen something like that in my life. And that's a beauty. That's a, you know, kind of glad as you have. I was glad that Celtic fans were so passionate about, because they were motivating our players to really win for them, because they really are so behind the team. And what, as you say, whoever is in that short or shirt, he will realize these supporters are behind you. And that's what I felt as a player. And on my first derby, that's the reason I gave everything just to win that. And then I was lucky to do that.
Oh, and we were lucky enough to witness it. And what a season. But, you know, we've had some great seasons since then. And we're going through a great period at the moment. And Neil Lennon is back in charge now, a player you played with. This could be a history-making season. I knew Neil when he was playing with you, and I knew that Neil enjoyed a good night out. And I knew that once or twice he was in Martin O'Neill's office. I've done a few shows as well with the boys, and the stories are great about the meetings in the office on a Monday morning. Did you see anything in Neil back then to say, you know, he leadership qualities, or were you surprised when he went into management?
No, actually. To be honest with you, asking me a question if I was surprised if he goes into management? No. I think... He already showed some signs then in terms of quality of leadership, but also in the same respect within the squad, okay? And that's part of the leadership. Leadership, obviously, you're playing well and you're fighting whatever yard you can on the football pitch, but also the other part is have that respect for each other or for team members, either on the bench or not on the bench, you know. And that shows Neil Lennon's character. And that I was not surprised at all he might go into management. Same time, at a time, as you say, yes, he loved, of course, his night out. And I think not just him, but a lot of other players as well. And sometimes I was part as well, because I really enjoyed Glasgow with him. They showed me Glasgow a little bit, missed you, you know. And I really enjoyed it, you know. But what we had as a character, we knew as a professional, the next day we have a training session or we have a game, we were professionals. We know we have to win. We need to show that we are, okay, if you go for a night out, then you also can put your heart and soul to playing football. And I think Lina Lellen and all the other guys had this character. And that was the beauty about that team in that year, you know. That's why it was also very successful. We knew how to enjoy yourself, but also we knew how to work very, very, very hard on the pitch, you know. coming into Neil Lennon's management, it's fantastic what he achieved. I think he progressed massively. He matured quite a lot with this. And I think it's fantastic with Celtic, you know, they have a great period now. I'm following them most of the time. I do hope one day when everybody can go to the stadium again, we can join the... I can join once to watch the game at Celtic Park. I've not been there for a while. Let's say that, you know.
Sometimes, like, I'm lucky enough to go to most matches, and you take it for granted, and then something like this, something like COVID-19 happens, and you go, you know what? I'll never take anything for granted again. You know, going to a football game or going for a few beers with your mates or whatever it is, you won't take it for granted. Now, you spoke about the mates there and the team ethic and the spirit within that team. There was one hell of a player in that team, and that was Henrik Larsson. You'd obviously heard of him before he came up, but when I speak to other players, they didn't realise just how good of a player he was until they actually got on the pitch with him on the training ground.
Yeah, but not just Henrik. I knew him before I went up there, because when we are similar age at the time, when he was a Feyenoord as well, we played the Grasshoppers, sometimes a Feyenoord at the time. Also, he was a Sweden international, I was a Switzerland international. We played against each other at that time. I knew already there how competitive he was and how, you know, from terms and skills and finisher. He was a great finisher. That's a given for Henrik, you know. And to join Celtic at the time, he'd be in the front as a defender. That's like a dream to have, because you know, whatever happens, Henrik is there and scores. And that's the beauty of a defender, you know, as long as you have a clean sheet at the back. In the front, Henrik will always do the job. And he was fantastic with that season as well. You know, I think everything melted so nicely with all the team members. Alan Thompson with his left foot, Chris Sutton holding the ball. And then obviously Henrik Larsson just whistle around Henrik, Chris Sutton as such. You know, that was always great to have that. You got that reference with Chris Sutton as a pinch of the ball to him and he holding up and Henrik pretty much either scores there or vice versa. It was a good kind of striker partner at the time. In the midfield, we had some Neil Lennon, of course, centre midfield with Paul Lambert. They were fantastic front of us, you know, screening the defence and going forward, passing there. It was a great, 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 great team, I have to be honest. Great to watch, great. I was happy to be a team member of that. Such a success. Great characters, even today, you know, when we talk to each other, we have great memories, you know, from these years, you know.
As I said, right, you only there for 6 months. For whatever reason, you offered a one-year deal and you decided against it. You took a three-year deal with Watford. The following season, the players that you mentioned there went on to play in the Champions League, and another great journey for us. We didn't get out of the group, but, you know, played Valencia then in the UEFA Cup. And then 2003, we got to the UEFA Cup final. Is there a tinge of regret there that you left too soon?
Oh, always is a regret to leave something you wanted to stay in the first place. As I said, I always said that I wanted to stay at Celtic, but I wanted to stay for a longer period, you know. And any time I tried to communicate with Celtic in terms of I want to have a longer period, but never really, that's the truth. There's never really a concrete offer came back from Celtic, you know. You're saying it's 1 year, but that 1 year, not even that was really on the table to analyse it, you know. And then it was already, the transfer period started July, and then season preparation started. I needed to know where I am going, because I was out of contract at that time. And, of course, I wasn't 21 or 22 at the same time, you know. I need to secure my future as well. So I... Watford came into it and at the time and they had a longer term contract. But I was waiting as much as I could, but at least had some comment from Celtic. So I said, okay, you can stay here. And maybe I could consider to stay even maybe a year or two, whatever, at the time. I would have done that, you know. But that's never happened. That's what I'm a little bit disappointed at that time. Never happened, but you need to understand as a player, you need to cue your futures as well, and especially you're nearly close to the end of your career. Regrets, of course, that I couldn't stay, but at the same time, it goes mutual on the other side. That also not really has given me kind of an official contract or offer on the table. I can actually say yes or no, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, you moved to Watford, Celtic progress under Martin. Would you still keep an eye on maybe the other clubs you played with as well? Do you still keep an eye to see how Celtic are doing, you know, and to keep an eye on results? And as you said, you'd like to get back up because it's been a while. If we get back in the stadium, you should be making your way back up now, because if we do this 10 in a row, it'd be some party.
Definitely. Listen, whatever happened, I stayed or not stayed. Listen, I was part of a team who made history for Celtic. I was glad I was part of that history. And these memories is like I was playing 10 years for Celtic. Let's call it that. Even was short, but it was so intense, this period. It's like I stayed forever there. And that's why I'm saying, you know, even today, short spell, massive successful with them. It felt like I was there for 5 or 10 years, you know, and that's Celtic for me. It was never go away. My memories would be one of the best clubs I played with, you know, and then, as I say, I would love to come back to see Celtic Park, you know, and get that feeling again I used to have, you know, as a player. It's been a long time, you know. It's fantastic. I envious the fans that can go to Celtic Park, to be honest with you.
Ramon, I want to take you back to Switzerland because, you know, your parents were immigrants. I'm fascinated with them fleeing Spain because of Franco and fascism. But now you're an immigrant in a country where, as well, to be accepted, you have to kind of sometimes work a lot harder and, you know, and the ambition you Absolutely. Obviously show to get there. You go on to captain your country.
That's irony.
You go on to captain them, okay, and represent them. You're playing the Euros, but you're left out of the World Cup squad. Mm-hmm. How hard is that to take?
Well, first of all, it was very hard. 94, Switzerland, I was with Roy Hodgson at the time, was the manager. Roy Hodgson was, without a doubt, the manager in Switzerland in terms of success. First time Switzerland qualified for such a big World Cup, like 94, after 30 years, I think. The last prior to 2 years, I was pretty much always in the squad. Roy Hodgson always took me on the squad. I was one of the youngest centre-half, let's be honest as well. So I got front of me two elder kind of centre-halves that had obviously priority. I was still young, so started to learn. But Roy Hodgson really was keeping me in the squad to learn, to be there, just in case injury was happening, of course. You know, sometimes that's why I couldn't play, sometimes some of that. But I was pretty much through the whole qualification. Yes, my hope was there to be part of that squad to 22. But it was the first time for a lot of Swiss guys to be qualified. They were pretty much the last season of their career. It was maybe the only potential tournament they're going to play. And I think Roy Hodgson thought, okay, you need to give them chance to a younger guy like myself at that time, you know. He was disappointed because I was always part of the squad. But you know what? I was also young and understood that I still have a chance maybe to qualify for the next tournament, you know, it's coming up. And that's what happened, of course. The Euro 96, we qualify. And that's what was my time to come and show and shine for the country at that time, you know. And I was proud to do that because I was proud also for my family as well because they had a very hard time to integrate to start with in Switzerland, you know. You need to imagine, you come to a country, you don't understand the language to start with. Where do you start to find even a job and everything, you know? So for me, it was easy because I born and grew up and I got to know the language straight away. I went to school. I was like kind of already partly integrated. But at the same time, you still have to find this image that you're an immigrant scenario. And that's, you know, if I look around now, immigration happens everywhere in the world, you know? And I think there's economic immigrations, obviously war immigrations are different, you know. But I think you need to understand these guys are not going to your country to take your things away. They're going away because in their own country, they haven't got opportunity or potentially they're coming out of the war. And that's if people understand that a little bit, they have to think about if they're in that position. Can you imagine, you know, Scotland is in a huge trouble and they need to go to Switzerland or any other countries and they have to take them on and you're not to be accepted. So you just have to imagine that kind of how you will feel, you know, and that's where my parents went through a little bit, me less a little bit, but I still have to prove them that I was part of their local guy, you know, on captain Switzerland that pretty much proved them everything and shut them a little bit, let's call it that.
Funny as well, like, you know, you ended up with my team, our team, Celtic, which was set up by Irish immigrants to feed the poor. and like, so it's the history that Celtic has as well with immigration.
This is why, you know, I knew the history, and then obviously for the whole Irish immigration and Irish immigration historically, you know, even in the UK, because, you know, they speak, same language. That's the easy there, but they've still been not accepted in the parcels because they were the immigrant in the UK. So whatever part of the UK they were going into it. So I was even speaking to Neil Leland sometimes as well, you know, and he said, I could feel with them because I went through in a similar way, but I came from a Spanish background where you don't even speak the language. So it's even more difficult to integrate the country, you know. But they could at least communicate and integrate and be similar culture, but it's not the same culture because I know that. I've been in Ireland as well, and I love them dearly because I have a similar background in terms of historically the immigration scenario, you know. But also Scots. Scots has also immigration, you know, in certain parts of the world, you know. So I think it's a path I went through it, and I'm glad that because I know it opens my eyes to all around the world of immigration and situations, you meeting people, you know, you understand a little bit more what they're going through it, you know.
Yeah, my father emigrated in the 50s to London, and my mum. Yeah. My mum didn't stick it long. She got homesick and came home, but he stuck it. And he said, yes, there was the no blacks, no dogs, no Irish in some of the accommodation places, the bed and breakfast. But he said his experiences were always positive. He, you know, he worked hard and he made a couple of quid, and he had them because there was no work in Ireland. So I think most families really can relate to it. And that's why I think it's great that, you know, the Celtic support, they do some great work with the immigrant community in Glasgow.
Yes.
You know, the fan groups and that, and the club. So I'm proud of be part of something like that. Moving on, when your parents went to Switzerland first, they got you educated. You've had quite a colourful career since you retired from playing football. A quick research on, you know, there's been jewellery shops, investment, there's been finance, there's been property, there's been hotels. So, you know, the business outside football has been quite good for you.
Yes.
But you've also been linked with buying Portsmouth and also running for the FIFA presidency. So you've been quite busy.
Listen, I think otherwise you get bored, you know, in our ages, you know. I think the football has given me a platform of a driven scenario of going forward, you know. Football has given quite an international platform as well. I was, you know, in a humble way, I would say, even coming from Switzerland, Switzerland is not the major kind of sports, we call it, you know, compared like Spain, Italy, or even in the UK and England or so, or Germany, you know, coming to Switzerland and then make it to play to the Serie A, one of the biggest leagues in those days, and then come to the Premier League and then come to Celtic. If I look back, you know, I'm very proud that I could actually even do something like that. It's from a small country like Switzerland where football is pretty much, as I say, nothing, you know. But I come back to my mother. She insisted to make an education, and in a humble way, she was strict, and I was crying many times. You know, I don't want to do it. I want to play football. Da da da. All these battles you have, you know. But if I look back, I'm blessed. You know, I'm glad that I actually went through that very tough times as well. But also, time he paid out in playing football, but also post-career that I had something to go into it, you know. I was banking in finance, that's what was my degree. And I went into asset management from day one after my career, you know. I was partner of an asset management. We went to private equity. We went to the hedge fund side. Different world. Completely different world than the football. Finance, I would say, how do you describe it? I thought I was coming from a quite high egocentric industry of football. Everybody thinks it's the best player in the world. And going into the city of London, I think it got even worse. It's even bigger egos. Everybody knows how to make money, how much money making, and so on. And everybody has the best investments. But the problem is that when they're losing the money, they're disappearing, you know. I got to know that very quick as well, you know. you don't have the football, you can't disappear when you're losing a game. You're there. You're on the front page. So this is the kind of advantage I had on the pitch, and football gives you as well. You know how to cut losses as well, but you also know how to prepare for wins as well and be humble about it when you win, you know, and not really brag yourself out there. And I think that comes also from my background at home as well, you know. Enjoy your win, but also be humble about it, you know, because you never know what's around the corner. That's something you're learning either from as a child from home, or you're learning through your career, you know. But it was great. I had this education. It goes back to the reference, having an education. It was, for me, I could not easy integrate, because it was tough the first 2-3 years to go into the business world. It was very, very tough, Andrew, I have to be honest. It's already tough for any normal person to start a business, because it's tough. You are independent. That's the nice thing about it. But at the same time, you need to make sure you can pay the bills end of the month, of course, you know. And the business doesn't start to be successful over 1 month or 2 months. It takes maybe a year to 2 years. Maybe people are more successful in the very 1 year, but it might also go down the next year. So in my case, the first 2 years was super, super tough. I was in an industry where very competitive. So that side already brought me with me from the sports side, like football, that I got to know. But here, the competitive was not on the football pitch. It was the mind, the academic side point of view, the cleverness in terms of trading and opportunity. And my toughest challenge was here. It was the perception the football players had within that industry. Obviously, the lowest, you know, football players are dumb, they're not uneducated. And then you got these city flyers with this nice little suits and everything, coming from God knows MBAs, and have run the best universities in the world. And you're coming in a way, humble way. Yes, I had my Swiss education, business degree and everything else, but I didn't accept that because you played football. So you were working more convincing about the perception of playing as a player of football than actually the product you were trying to sell. Because the product itself might have been better than the ones I have, but they will not take it because your background was playing football. They will ask you, how the hell you coming into the finance? These eyebrows coming in. Listen, I can understand that side, because there's not many football players went to that direction, and you might questioning. That's normal. That's human. But the respect I was not being given. And that's what's the disappointing part of it. So when I realized that, then I said, okay, I need to be better than them. So the competitive side comes into it. And that comes also as a little boy. You need to show the local, even if you're an immigrant, you have to show them you're potentially better to them accepting you. And that's triggered me. Suddenly with 35, I have to do the same thing again. And that was the hardest part. With 35, what as a young boy I needed to do? Restart pretty much my career in a different world and prove them I can actually be part of that world and have knowledge about it, you know? And that was really, really tough, Andrew, the first 2 years. I have to be honest. I nearly, in one stage, was giving up, because I said, why the hell I have to prove these guys anything? I've done my career already. I've done a decent career, I would say, as a football player. These guys, okay, they're coming and go as a city. Why do I have to prove them in a way? But I think my perseverance in terms of proving them was much higher, and I wanted to do that until I proved them that they might be wrong, and they're accepting me. And then that's what happened after 2 to 3 years. The business starts to be more accepted as such, and I've been accepted within the industry. You know, even sometimes today, people asking questions about it. But once they start to talk and talk with me, then they start to do the belief that obviously you start to gain knowledge and experience. Now, looking back, I'm nearly 18 years within the industry, and I gained a hell of a lot of experience within the industry.
So is the future bright for Roman Vega?
The future always has to be bright. You have to look at always the bright side of life, you know, my friend, Andrew, you know. I think even you're now in COVID-19, a lot of people struggling, and I feel sorry for lots of guys or people around there. We're all in there. Whatever way you look at it, everybody will have some loss. But I will only say that this is also a good time to reset yourself and have some targets, you know. Don't really give up whatever you win, whatever you might lost, whatever you potentially trouble financially, the jobs and everything else. Everybody's going through it. You're not the only one out there struggling with it. Really, every single person out there is having trouble. Even maybe they're not telling you, but because they're afraid to be weak. But it is a momentum to say, you know, everybody's in there, and you have to be strong about it, and then it keep going. There's always a solution. The one thing I realized, whatever the deepest or lowest part you have, there's always a solution to get out. If it's a small or a big step, but it's always a solution.
Wise words, Ramon. Ramon, before we wrap up, if I could take you back to one moment in those 6 months or something, what would it be?
6 months. Wow. They were so intense. Do we have time on the show?
If you could pick one moment out of those 6 months, one game, one goal, one moment, one...
Wow. Well, I think the first game was without a doubt one of the biggest moments of a start of a major journey with Celtic. Having two goals scored in your first game, not trained 1 minute with the team as a defender. I'm not even, I was a striker, and you're scoring two goals. It's like a dream come true, you know. That's for certain one of the greatest memories. But the main game, I think, when we closed and won the league to close the treble, to just really have all the three trophies in one cabinet. And I still have this picture at home, big in my place, because this is, having these three trophies, I think this is one of the biggest memories at that 6 months. There's no doubt. And then I will repeat again, you can play anywhere, a year, 2 years, 4 years, but if you don't bring trophies back, these 4 years, I nearly forgotten my.
True.
Trophies, you can talk for the next 100 years. We can talk in 50 years again. I remember the treble. Everybody will remember. But if you played there for 6 months, you didn't win one trophy, everybody will forget you.
And Martin was the first manager to do it since Jock Stein.
It's historical. And I'm so proud I actually be part of such a historical kind of moment for Celtic. You know? And Celtic Club deserves to have it, because the fans... one of the most loyal fans I see in my career, and I played in many countries as well. And even as was for short term there, they still praise me, and I see some even random players around the world, you know, a Scottish guy or Irish guy. I said, why are you playing for Celtic, you know? And he said, goodness me, that was 20 years ago, you know? And I said, you still remember that? I'm humbled, kind of surprised. He said, goodness me, you still remember that? And that's the beauty about football. And that's the beauty of the place for such a big club, you know? And I think Celtic fans should be very, very proud of actually supporting a massive club.
Well, Ramon, you know, you only have to click in the name of Ramon Vega into that season and just click images, and there's some magnificent images of your time at Celtic. And just to let you know that as fans, we enjoyed that season too. It's been an absolute pleasure to thank you, Ramon, or to talk to you. And I'd like to thank you for coming on and taking the time out to chat to me. And I'd like to wish you all the best for the future. And hopefully, by the end of this season, we'll see you in Glasgow.
Absolutely. I hope so too. I really, really wish all the best with Neil Lennon and all the guys as well. They've done a fantastic job. And I think I really look forward one to be a Celtic part. So say hello to all the Celtic fans again. It would be nice. Nice memory again.
Brilliant, Ramon. As I said, thank you so much for taking the time out.
Thank you, Andrew. Pleasure for me. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ramon, for taking time out to chat to me today. Very interesting to hear about his parents fleeing Franco's fascist Spain for a new life in Switzerland, where they couldn't speak the language but created a home and family unit for Ramon to get educated and build a career in football and later in business. We are almost finished the new upgrades to the website, and the new app is just about ready to go. If you like what we're doing with the podcast and the website and you would like to support us, you can support us for the price of a pint by visiting our homepage, CelticFanzine.com, and click the support button. You can donate on a one-off basis, or you can set up to become a supporter and support us throughout the season. Now, to keep the content free and independent, we rely on our listeners and readers to support us. But don't worry if you can't afford it at this time, because we will still provide the same content, and maybe down the line, you might be in a position to support us. You can also support us by clicking into CelticFanzine.com/shop/ and buying a bit of merchandise, a fanzine, or taking out a subscription. Prices start at a fiver. The members area is also about to go live. Membership starts at $5.99 for 3 months and $19.99 for 12 months. And you get access to all digital editions of the fanzine for the upcoming season, and also access to our back catalogue of fanzines that we've produced over the last number of seasons. We will also add some extra content and a few bits and pieces over the season. All subscribers to the print edition will also get full access to the members area free. As always, thank you for listening and for your continued support. And once again, thanks to our producer, Ronan McQuillan, for his patience and brilliance. And don't cut that out, Ronan. The podcast is available on all platforms, so hit the subscribe or follow buttons and you'll never miss an episode. Alternatively, you can visit CelticFanzine.com/podcast/, where all episodes are stored. Please follow More Than 90 Minutes on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, where we always have offers on merchandise and some competitions to win a bit of merchandise, fanzine, and when we get back to the football, we'll throw in a couple of tickets. Thanks again to our sponsor, CelticClothing.com. If your business or Celtic Supporters Club would like to sponsor an episode or advertise in the fanzine or on the website, please get in contact. You can email us at info@CelticFanzine.com. Keep the comments coming in and let us know your story and who you would like us to chat to on the show. We will be back on Friday with episode 19, when former Celtic player and Dundee captain and manager, and a bit of a Dundee legend actually, Barry Smith, will be joining me for a chat and to look ahead to the season and the weekend fixture against Hamilton. Enjoy the podcast. If you can support us, enjoy the week as we look forward to the 10 in a row season kicking off the weekend. Keep the faith and stay safe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.